Where in the world is MF Global's money?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Jeremy Hobson. Today, John Corzine goes back to Congress. This time, instead of asking the questions, he'll be answering for the collapse of brokerage firm MF Global. Corzine was the CEO of the company and is accused of taking huge risks on European bonds. MF Global also can't find hundreds of millions of dollars. Corzine has submitted testimony to Congress saying he doesn't know where the money is. Heidi Moore reports.
For most of his career, John Corzine took the kinds of risks that paid off big. He made his name trading government bonds at Goldman Sachs, became the firm's CEO, and then wrestled the secretive bank into going public. Roy Smith was a partner at Goldman and saw Corzine in action.
Well, he took large risks when he was at Goldman Sachs, without any question.
Corzine left Wall Street to be a U.S. senator and a one-term governor of New Jersey. Then last year, he joined MF Global, a small commodities brokerage. As CEO, he pushed it to take big risks on European bonds with its own money. Goldman might have been able to absorb those losses, but MF wasn't. Corzine's lucky streak ended.
I was concerned that, he was walking into a firm that had no experience, really, of dealing in the kind of risk-taking that he wanted them to take.
And it was likely Corzine was a little rusty.
He'd been out of the game for about 10 years, and this is a very difficult game to leave for such a long time. Very hard to just go away for 10 years and come back and assume everything is the same.
The biggest issue in MF Global's collapse is over $1 billion of lost customer money. It shouldn't have been betting with that. Gerald Celenti was an MF Global client who's hunting for his lost cash. He thinks Corzine got a pass because of his reputation.
If any broker did what John Corzine allegedly did, boy, those SWAT teams would be there, and they'd be breaking down the doors and arresting him. But not John Corzine.
Corzine's fall from grace is like a Shakespearean tragedy, says Paul Argenti, a professor at Dartmouth's Tuck School of Business.
Just hearing about what he was like when he was at Goldman Sachs versus what we see now, it's kind of scary.
Corzine's former colleagues know they'll face backlash if they go easy on him today. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
European Union leaders are meeting in Brussels today for an emergency summit. Some of the proposals on the table are so drastic, European Union treaties would have to be rewritten. Carl Haglund is a Finnish member of the European Parliament. He joins me now. Good morning, Mr. Haglund.
Good morning.
What can be done at this summit in Brussels that hasn't been done at all the previous meetings?
Well, they should address the actual problem, which is the more enormous amount of sovereign debt that some member states have a problem with, and too much focus has been used these past meetings on institutional challenges rather than focusing on the actual problem with the sovereign debt crisis.
Do smaller countries in Europe like yourselves worry that you might get pressured into a deal by the French and Germans? Is that a concern?
Yes, unfortunately. I've had several debates here in Helsinki today around the topic. And it's very clear that some national politicians, especially who don't work in Brussels, feel like the aim of the French and the Germans is to force through a new culture where a majority can take decisions where smaller countries don't have to be taken into account.
If some sort of agreement can't be made at this summit, what happens then?
If we once again end up with this small step approach where the council is not able to address the actual crisis, in other words, the sovereign debt, and they try to sort of dilute the discussion by talking about treaty changes and other things, I'm afraid that the markets will react very negatively. And then it's going to put additional pressure on Italy and Spain on the sovereign debt markets, and that might become unsustainable quite fast.
Carl Haglund is a Finnish member of the European Parliament. Carl, thank you.
Thank you.
The markets are feeling optimistic about Europe this morning. London's FTSE is up 0.5%. Germany's DAX is up 0.6%. U.S. markets were mixed yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.3% to close at 12,196. The European Central Bank has just cut interest rates this morning to 1%. That's meant to encourage borrowing and lending and help the European economies grow.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering IRA savings products and a Raise Your Rate 4-year CD. Learn more at allybank.com. By Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
It's a tall world, after all. Tall, half-calf, cappuccino, that is. The world is drinking more coffee. From London, the BBC's Matthew Davis reports.
Coffee consumption has grown by an average of 2.5% over the last 10 years and is still surging ahead, despite the fact that many drinkers around the world have less money in their pockets. But it's not that we're drinking more coffee because we're working harder and need the extra energy. According to Jose Setti, the head of operations at the London-based International Coffee Organization, it's that new consumers are being turned on to the bean.
Even when times are hard, people still drink coffee. And the growth in coffee consumption these days occurs much more in emerging markets, which are bearing up much better under this economic turbulence than in the developed world.
Over the next 5 years, raw coffee prices are expected to fall, and that'll bring in even more drinkers. Last year, the world consumed more than 8 million metric tons of coffee. That's 2.4% more than the previous year, and enough to fill more than 80 aircraft carriers. In London, I'm the BBC's Matthew Davis for Marketplace.
And finally, Norway is suffering from a butter shortage, partly because of a low-carb diet fad that swept the country. It was also a low-production year. Butter now costs up to $20 a pound in Norway and is even being packaged and sold as a holiday gift. So Norwegian kids could very well be saying, "I can't believe it's butter," on Christmas morning. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Billionaire Eli Broad made his money in real estate. He's a bigwig in the art world, and he has big thoughts and big money to spend about remaking American schools.
I'm not sure that some of the things you learn in the world of business or in government or other nonprofits can't be applied to education.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. What kind of return do you get on education philanthropy? The story next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.